Hey, y'all.
This is Talkin' Trash with Liv
and Lizzie,
the podcast where two friends show each other our silliest and most treasured movies.
Each week, we'll watch a beloved movie,
no matter how corny, childish, or contrived.
Sometimes a masterpiece with minor flaws.
Other times, a magnificent mess.
Because one man's trash
is Liv and Lizzie's treasure.
I wonder if that little clink will pick up on the mic. We are drinking. We'll go ahead and run the vibe check here.
Our vibe check is immaculate.
Tonight. It is.
Immaculate vibes. Perfect vibes.
We are drinking some very fancy tea. This is hazelnut and chocolate and hazelnut tea. What is this
it's
one called?
Delicious. Whatever.
Hazelnut cookie tea is what it's called. Courtesy of my good friend Caitlin.
It's very yummy.
Out of lovely fancy teacups.
Fancy British tea. Okay, so my teacup is like this floral thing from Boston. It's super cute, but you gotta tell them about your teacup.
Yeah, so your teacup, I just to understand why there's a floral teacup from Boston, it is from the Boston Tea Party Museum.
Mm-hmm.
I am drinking from a gift from my mother, which is this lovely blue and gold embossed teacup that on the side says, to commemorate the birth of His Royal Highness, Prince George of Cambridge, 22nd of July, 2013.
God, we're nerdy.
I love this cup so much.
It's a great cup.
It makes me really happy.
It's a really good cup.
Yeah, it's usually up on my shelf. I have pulled off the fancy teacups for this week. Oh, and we have just a little bit of gin. A
little splash of gin in there to make it spicy.
Mm-hmm.
So, how has your week been, Lizzie?
It has been busy, but good.
I think
I don't know if the world is like was supposed to be better by now, but is still in a great deal of turbulence and tumult. However, I think I was able to rest quite a bit this summer, and I feel like I'm in a genuinely better headspace, and I'm in a better space to take care of myself, and so I am hopefully going to be coming into fall in a much better place than I was coming into fall of the year of our Lord 2020. So,
yeah,
I think I'm managing the busyness better than I was a year ago.
That's good. I definitely feel, like, I honestly had, like, a really rough summer, and I don't even know why.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was just, like, I am very, like, when crisis happens, I go into crisis mode, and I think, like, COVID, during COVID, it was just like, okay, like, what do we need to do? Like, okay, we're working from home. We're, you know, whatever we're doing. Like, oh, okay, gotta do it. Gotta adapt. Gotta, you know. And then summer hit, and I had some time off from work. And weirdly enough, that was the thing that, like, when I wasn't in crisis mode, everything just kind of hit me all at once.
Yeah.
Like, I survived a pandemic that's not over yet, but at the time it felt like it was on the out and out, and of course we know that's not true now, but there was definitely a while where I was like, oh my god, like, what am I doing with my life? Like, I was just like full, like, I don't know what's going on. But I'm starting to feel a little better. I'm feeling a lot more confident, and I'm excited for fall. It's my favorite season. I'm excited for Halloween and pumpkins. Even if I know Delta is not looking good, I know there's a chance we might be going back into, like, you know, I don't think we're going to go in full lockdown again. Not in Georgia.
Yeah.
But, you know, even if restrictions kind of increase again and we're staying home a little bit more, you know, I'm cool watching horror films and Halloween classics. Like, I can watch Halloween Town, you know, from home.
You know,
and
I haven't watched Halloween Town since, like, Halloween Town was on Disney Channel.
Oh, I love Halloween Town.
Yeah.
I honestly, like, I'm excited for the movies we have coming up, but I am itching for October. Mm-hmm. Because, like, so before, we were talking about the lineup for our next four movies, and I was, like, having a hard time picking mine.
Yeah.
And part of it, if I'm honest, is because I know exactly which two movies I'm picking for Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to show you Practical Magic, and I'm going to show you Casper the Friendly Ghost.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's all I care about right now are those two films. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm so ready for Halloween.
I'm in that mode, but for Christmas.
Yeah.
I'm like, I can't wait for Christmas movies to watch Christmas movies again. And it's August.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I went hard for Christmas last year.
Uh-huh.
I think I'm going to go even harder for Christmas this year. I think I'm going to start planning Christmas in September. Because I want it to be the merriest of Christmases this year.
I think I'm going to decorate for Halloween in, like, the first week of September. And then as soon as Halloween passes, like, there's a lot of people who are like, you can't decorate for Christmas until after Thanksgiving. And I'm like, no, I think that November 1st, I'm going to put up Christmas.
I think that's fine. I have to be honest, I was one of those people.
Uh-huh.
Mostly because I also just like fall decorations.
I do,
and
too.
And I just wanted them around longer.
Yeah. But I love Christmas decorations, and I want to, like, live with them a little longer, too.
I am very much a person who I'm like, I like having Christmas decorations up the week of Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I like to put them up. So, you know, I was the person who was like, you know, all this war on Christmas nonsense, it's Thanksgiving that's getting ignored, and people are forgetting the true purpose of the thankfulness of the harvest holiday. And
mm-hmm.
But no, I'm kind of over that, mostly because I just, especially last year, I was like, nope, it's Christmas time now.
Yep.
Let's go. And I'll probably be that person this year. So.
But yeah, I am definitely excited for the holiday season in general.
Yep.
But it's not the holiday season yet, so
we're
filling the void with some other things that bring us joy.
I am so excited to watch this movie with you.
I am too. I've seen it, but I literally have, like, no memory of it.
So this week we are watching Austin Land. And I need to look at the director's name again. This director did Napoleon Dynamite, and I do not...
What?
This is the same director as Napoleon Dynamite.
No!
Yep. Yep,
Gina,
yep,
you fat lord.
Jerusha...
The food!
Jerusha Hess. I believe I'm saying that right. Yeah, same director.
What?
Other interesting and notable figures in this movie. We have already addressed the fact that Jennifer Coolidge is in this, and I think she's the best part of this. Roger Ebert disagrees with me, but honestly, in this case,
Roger Ebert,
he can bite me.
Can suck it.
Yeah.
Jennifer Coolidge is one of my favorite people. We were talking about this before it started. It's like, as soon as I saw she was in this movie, like, just gut reaction. I was like, you look like the 4th of July.
Makes you want a hot dog real bad.
So my
favorite thing she says in either of those movies is when she's gonna help Elle with some sort of it's in the sequel. She goes to Washington to help her, like, get enough, like, signatures to protest a bill, but somehow the word discharge is in, like, the legalese. So the elevator doors open and she's there and she goes, "Who's ready to discharge?" And it's my favorite part of those entire movies.
God.
Oh my gosh.
So this is the second Jennifer Coolidge film we've watched.
Oh my gosh, it is.
She was in
Cinderella Story.
Yeah.
I like her much more in this one.
I honestly, I don't care what she's in. I like anything that she's in.
I just think she's funny.
And I love that guy on TikTok that just does Jennifer Coolidge impressions.
Yes.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
I won't say my favorite quotes from her in this movie, but essentially I just quote them all the time. This movie also has Keri Russell, J.J. Feld. I do not know the name of the actor who you like from Castlevania.
I do. Let's talk about him. So, James Callis, who is most famous for his work in Battlestar Galactica,
How did I not know that?
Yeah. I can't remember his character's name because I've never actually watched it.
I feel like
I
need to revoke my nerd card if I haven't watched Battlestar Galactica.
Like, we should watch it at some point. But anyways, so he voices Alucard in Castlevania. And, you know, as a woman who's almost 30, sometimes I'm embarrassed that I'm still in love. Like, two of my greatest loves in film or TV show, like, history are animated. And I feel like I should be embarrassed by that, but...
That's, like, the majority of mine. So, yeah. I don't know. If you're ashamed, I'm just gonna crawl back into my corner.
Like, if I could only have, like, two characters from, like, here on out... Maybe, like, three. I still love Solas from Dragon Age. I will never let him go.
Mm-hmm.
I will always, always, always love Kakashi from Naruto.
Yeah.
And I would die a thousand times for Alucard Tepesh from Castlevania. So James Callis can do no wrong in my eyes. I don't even know what he's like as a person. I just know he voices my favorite animated boy. So to you, James Callis.
I think he is hilarious in this movie. So by the way, this is one of the first films that we're neither streaming nor renting. I own this film on Blu-ray.
We watched a couple on Blu-ray.
Probably a couple.
Watched Cinderella with...
which, again, I owned on Blu-ray.
I did, too.
I think we watched your copy.
Yeah. There's been a few that we've watched, but not many. Most of them we stream.
Yeah. But I will say... we're currently we have the DVD menu up behind us, and you can kind of guess like different pairings based on the way the menu set up.
Yeah, it's pretty easy.
So he is chaperoning Jennifer Coolidge throughout this movie. Okay. And it's absolutely hysterical.
Who's the dreamboat on the right?
Oh, I do not remember his name. I will look it up and tell you. He is an absolute dreamboat. Let's see. Hold on. It is, Ricky White. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry, not White. I'm so sorry. Whittle. And I am trying to see, get to his IMDb page and maybe see what else he has been in. American Gods.
Oh, he plays Shadow in American Gods. I haven't seen this show yet, but I read the books, so I assume he's Shadow.
There you go.
That's cool. Okay, well, he looks like a snack cake.
Yeah.
I've never actually seen anything with him in it.
Brett McKenzie from Flight of the Conchords is in this movie. He is
no
not on
way.
Here. Yep.
I love Flight of the Conchords.
Yep. He is very funny in this. I will also say, it is worth noting, this film was produced both by Shannon Hale, who wrote the book, which I'll talk about more in a second.
That's fun.
And our favorite Mormon vampire mom.
Shut up.
No.
Hold on.
Doesn't that explain everything you need to know?
Stop everything. This film was directed by...
Produced.
No, but it was directed by the director of Napoleon Dynamite and produced by Stephanie Myers of Twilight.
Yeah. Yep.
Trying really hard not to say some choice words right now and keep this a PG podcast, but... What?
Yeah.
What is this movie?
Okay, I will try and explain what to me this movie is, but first I will give the stats on it. I think this is a perfect submission for Talkin' Trash, and here is why.
One thing, though, before we get to stats, I think we forgot to mention that J.J. Feld?
I think it's Feld.
Whatever it is. He's in this movie.
Yes, I think he's adorable.
He's super cute, but, like, he's also, like, secondhand Tom Hiddleston. He looks like Tom Hiddleston from afar, you know?
I completely
agree.
He's
a poor man's Tom Hiddleston.
I completely agree. However, I will say, if you're not in love with him by the end of this movie, I don't understand.
Okay.
I will not understand.
He's definitely a dreamboat.
He is an absolute dreamboat.
I've seen him in a few... I saw him in Turn, and I definitely had a crush on him in Turn. And then I was telling you about another movie called Third Star that I'm going to make you watch at some point.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have, like, a bro road trip month. Or not month, but, like, session at some point.
We'll talk about that.
But he was in that movie. But it also had Benedict Cumberbatch and Benedict Cumberbatch kind of looks like an alien, but I love him.
He also looks like he's distantly related to Benedict Cumberbatch.
He just looks generically British.
He, if he and Benedict and Tom Hiddleston were they put in a room together for 24 hours, I'm pretty sure the Empire would rise again and the sun would not set on the British Empire.
If they, like, they could do a movie where they all just played brothers.
Yeah.
You know what I want?
What do you want?
If I was a director, I would hire people strictly based on their weird British names.
Mm-hmm.
Like freaking, it'd be like Benedict Cumberbatch. What is that guy, like, who plays Eggsy from...
Oh,
It's like Eaglebert something.
Well, now I'm not going to remember it because all I can think is Eaglebert. Taron... Egerton.
But, like, just all of them that have, like, weird British names. Like, the female lead would be, like, Inogen Poot.
Do you know what I want? I want five British actors to be in a gender-swapped Pride and Prejudice, and I want all of them to be the Bennett brothers. And then I want the weird British actress names to be the gender-swapped Darcy.
Okay.
By the way, I don't think we've talked... Are you about to talk about the tweet?
Tweet.
Oh, someone tweeted that they thought that there should be another Pride and Prejudice adaptation with Dev Patel and John Boyega as Darcy and Bingley, respectively.
Stop.
Right?
We were talking about this beforehand, and I was trying, I was like, I do not know how to talk about Dev Patel respectfully.
Uh-huh.
I was like, I don't know.
She was very specific about what she wanted to do with Dev Patel.
Yes.
Which I will not repeat
here. It's not safe for this channel. But I think he is an absolute stud muffin. And
he is.
I went and saw The Green Knight, which was a bonkers movie. Yeah. I really enjoyed it, but it was weird as hell. But, like, Kyle hated it. We saw it with our friend Thad, who loved it. And I was... Literally, I left the theater and I was sitting in the car asking myself, did I like that movie because it was good?
Or because I was thirsty for Dev Patel?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I don't know the answer to that even right now.
I still need to see it. I will... Sorry, retreating... bringing handsome men back to this movie because I actually think that this conversation suits this movie well.
Okay. I do have one side note that I want... to circle back around to in a minute, but go ahead.
Well, I'm about to go into stats, so actually you go ahead.
So we were talking about, like, the Austin, like, Pride and Prejudice, but, like, gender swapped.
Yeah.
I want to cast the Bennett brothers real quick.
Uh-huh.
Okay. J.J. Field is Elizabeth Bennett.
Okay.
Tom Hiddleston is Jane.
Jane. Yeah, because perfection. Right.
Benedict Cumberbatch is Mary. Tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I'm wrong. He's such a dweeb.
Yeah, he can't
and
be.
And I mean that in the best way.
He can't be anyone else.
He'd be a good Mary.
Yeah. Are you putting Taron Egerton as Lydia?
I think so.
I think so, too.
So who's Kitty? Kitty. Who are
you missing? We're both sipping our tea thoughtfully as we think about this.
Who's a... No, I got it.
You got it?
I got it.
Yep.
Because Lydia is the second
youngest. Lydia's the youngest.
She's the youngest?
Yeah. But she's the tallest, according to chapter 3.
Tom, why am I blanking on his name? Spider-Man.
Holland?
Tom Holland is
Tom Holland's Kitty.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tom Holland.
Yeah.
And then he's just like, oh, I never get to have any fun, and is like pouting the whole time.
I want to go to Brighton.
Tell me that this is not the perfect gender swap fan cast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now
I would watch. Okay.
All right. Who's Jane? Or not who's Jane.
Who's
Bingley? Who's Lizzie.
Oh, good lord.
Lizzie, Darcy, sorry.
I think Amelia Clark would be a very cute Bingley.
She'd be such a cute Bingley.
She'd be very cute. Gosh.
Who's our Darcy?
I don't know. Because, see, it's so hard because I'm immediately like, who's, like, the tallest, broodiest person I can think of? But they're all men.
Okay, so she's not particularly broody, but I think she could play broody.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember the actress's name, but she plays Claire Frazier in Outlander.
Oh! She could do it.
I think she could do it, too.
She could do it.
All right, we need to get on this. So, yep. Directors out there, you're welcome.
We got this.
Gender swap. Go to.
As long as they're not all too old for it. I have said before that in, like, 20 years or so, I would love to see Tom Hiddleston play Mr. Bennet.
Yeah.
I'd be super here for
that. Yeah.
So...
okay,
we've this tells us a lot about us as the viewers of this. This movie has a 32% on Rotten Tomatoes and a 54% audience score.
Audience scores 54%.
Audience score is 54%.
Lizzie,
yeah,
you are truly showing me trash today.
I really am. However, excited. This is the first time where I see that. And me personally, I'm genuinely upset about it. I usually don't get too upset, but for once, I'm actually like disappointed that the audience score is that low. And I will try to articulate why now. So, I feel like the scores are both so low because to some extent, this is not the best made movie.
Mm-hmm.
It is certainly very corny, and a lot of the performances are over the top, but that's why you get Jennifer Coolidge. But I think... I hate to accuse it of being low on the basis of... I'm not going to sit here and be like, it's because of sexism! But I do think that there's always an inherent dislike of things that are... very implicitly, this is girly girl fantasy, girly girl ridiculousness, and just very much like basic comedy catering to these kind of lady tropes.
Mm-hmm.
However, the real reason why I like this movie, and maybe this is my singlehood showing. However, I feel like I'm a very content single person.
Mm-hmm.
I like this movie because you would assume that the theme of this is, like, you can have your fantasies, but understand that, you know, reality is, you know, what you need to expect and be okay with. But really the theme of this movie is like, yeah, have your fantasy and have high standards.
Mm-hmm.
And your fantasies are valid.
Yeah.
And you are someone else's fantasy. And I just really like that theme, and I really like how encouraging it is and how it's not something that we typically see.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe people didn't think it was funny, but the humor hits for me
okay.
so hard in this movie. They invested so much in the setting and backdrops of this, and every time I watch this, I notice a new detail in the background that I think is absolutely hysterical.
Just from the, like home screen alone, the tea party setup is stunning.
It's a feast for the eyes.
The florals are everything. The florist who did this film needs to be praised. I already like the costuming a lot.
I think they're great.
Okay, I will... Should we move into what we expect? Can I go ahead and...
Please tell me what you expect.
Okay, here's what I expect. I don't know why. I don't know if I can articulate it. And I feel bad saying this because I don't like to usually... share opinions like this unless I can really articulate why. I'm not a big Keri Russell fan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but I find her kind of I don't think she's terrible, but I find her boring, and I wish I could put my finger on what it is. Maybe after this I'll be able to figure it out. I've seen her in a few movies and I just never particularly care for her acting choices, I guess. So I'm expecting to like the peripheral characters more than the main couple. I'm expecting
to have moments of this that I super enjoy and moments where I'm just like, why are we watching this?
Okay.
I think Jennifer Coolidge can do no wrong in my eyes. Even when she's bad, she's good. So I highly anticipate enjoying her and James Callis. And I think I will certainly enjoy parts of this film.
Okay.
I'm expecting it to be cheesy. I'm expecting it to play into all of my favorite, like, Austonian tropes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also expecting to be, like, mildly annoyed at the protagonist's decision-making.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is my biggest qualm with most chick flicks. They're either really well done with wonderful characters, or the protagonist is the stupidest person in the entire world, and there's, like, very little in between.
Mm-hmm.
So all the ones I like, you know, have, like, good, well-rounded protagonists, and all the ones I dislike have, you know...
Okay.
Dumb protagonists. I feel like she's going to be in the dumb protagonist camp.
I think those are all fair expectations.
Okay.
The last thing I will say before we start this is one of the few times where, I have read the book and seen the movie, and I like the movie better.
Okay.
And I think part of that is the book, while I don't look at this movie and I go, oh, I love the protagonist, I really did not like the protagonist in the book.
Okay.
Each chapter starts with her giving a summation of one of her past, like, 34 boyfriends, but boyfriends include, like, boys she held hands with in elementary school, or like guys who she like danced with at certain parties, and it's really like sad. And I think this protagonist, like, we get visual cues in the beginning that, like, you know, she's in this kind of sad state of life.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't harp on it, and it's really nice. We don't spend a lot of time in exposition world.
Okay.
And also just the humor in this, in the book, it does not work. You give these lines to Jennifer Coolidge and it just works.
Yeah.
So I think it's much better. But as long as you enjoy parts of this, that's fine. Honestly, I don't care if you don't enjoy any of it. I get to watch it again.
Okay.
So I do genuinely think you will like this more than Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
I hope so. If Lord. Only
let's be real, you loved the first
half. I liked the first half of it.
I think you will not be as upset with the ending of this one.
Okay.
So
as upset. That's a low bar.
Well, it's the most realistic statement I can make right
okay.
now.
Okay. Well, I'll let you know then.
Cool.
All right.
Well,
cheers to Austinland.
Tally ho. All right. I am very curious to know what you are thinking and feeling right now.
You know what? I have almost the exact same feeling as I had with Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Really?
It didn't stick the landing.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk.
I'm a big believer that if I don't like, if I don't like the ending of a film,
okay,
then I oftentimes will not like the rest of it in retrospect.
Okay.
And I liked almost all of it until she left Austinland, and then I didn't care anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. So let me start. Well, let me just kind of walk through it, and I'll tell you what I didn't like along the way. So, I am not the biggest Austin fangirl in the world,
mm-hmm.
but I'm a pretty hardcore Austin fangirl.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things that, what was her name? Jane.
Yeah.
Some of the things that she did,
I don't think a hardcore Austin fan would ever do. Yeah.
In fact, like, even down to, like, her bedroom.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like a hardcore Austin fangirl wouldn't, like... It's not infantile. Like, it's weird that she has, like, a dollhouse.
Yeah,
I agree. It's weird that she has, like, Darcy in, like, sparkle letters above her bed.
I agree.
The way that she behaves...
There's a maturity that's lacking in her. And
I feel like there's kind of an inherent maturity, old soul kind of vibe for most Austin fangirls.
Yes.
Like, if I were there, I would have, you know, I wouldn't have been like, oh, I'm so bored, stuck in this house. Like, it's part of the whole
package.
That's
part of the experience.
Yeah. So, like, you sit there and you do your needlepoint, and you talk, and you read books, and then you take a turn about the room.
Yep.
And
you take a stroll in the garden.
You
and
have
you
see very
who you run into.
Subtle but pointed hot gossip. You know?
Yeah.
And I felt like she got there and she's like, I'm the biggest fangirl in the world, and then immediately ran off with the guy who was like, yeah, I'm not even into this role play thing.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that they were building to the punchline of, like, he was the actor all along, even though he seemed realistic, mm-hmm. and that was part of the whole experience to fool her. But I would be upset with that. Like, at the end, I would be like, you mean to tell me that my LARP experience that I played for was for you to trick me into falling in love with a guy who listens to his, like, earbuds?
Absolutely.
While he's doing his work and supposed to be in an immersive experience? Like, I'd be upset with that.
Yeah. I think that's... I honestly think that that's part of it, too, though, is that you have the experience that's happening around the two main protagonists, mm-hmm. who want the sincerity of the experience,
mm-hmm.
but there's just all this, like, I mean, he says, I thought my aunt's profession was vulgar.
Yeah.
And she is. She's a vulgar woman.
Yeah.
And what her business is vulgar.
Yeah.
But they are looking for something sincere,
mm-hmm.
in the midst of it.
Yeah.
So I think the Martin thing is that's the guy that she's always settled for.
Mm-hmm.
And because she doesn't let herself have her fantasies.
She doesn't get the Darcy because she thinks that she can't get the Darcy.
Yeah. And she thinks that it's something that she needs to keep in this little side pocket because, mm-hmm. every other, you know, guy has ridiculed her for her, you know, interest in it and obsession,
yeah.
with it. And I like at the end that the guy she ends up with walks around a theme park with her with a t-shirt that says,
I
heart
Darcy. Yeah.
Because he validates her interests,
yeah.
and supports it.
I get that. And, you know, there were just, like, subtle things about her that I think could have been written better.
I will agree with that.
One of the things that drove me absolutely bonkers, and this is probably a small thing, but her dress at the end had, like,
yep.
frilly spaghetti straps, and no Austin fangirl.
Can I be honest?
Would wear that.
The only reason why I forgive it here is that I'm constantly told I'm supposed to forgive it in the 2005 Pride and Prejudice. Caroline Bingley wears a strapless ball gown. Not strapless, but like a spaghetti strap frilly ball gown. At the Netherfield Ball in the 2005 Pride and Prejudice, and I can't believe more people aren't upset about it.
Yeah, but, like, I don't like the 2005 Pride and Prejudice, and, like, decisions like that are, like, 90% of the reason why. Like, I can't... I want that historical accuracy in the costuming.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care about historical accuracy anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, you know... I don't care if, like, the music is perfect. I don't care if the dances are perfect. You know, like, some people get, like, up in arms about, like, casting decisions. I don't care. Like, if as long as the person in the role is a good actor, I don't care what they look like. I don't care where they're from. I don't care how old they are. Just give them a good dress. And give them a period accurate dress. That's the only thing I want. And it bugs me when it's not. And it bugs me that this character who's like, I'm the biggest Jane Austen fan in the entire world, has spaghetti straps. I don't know what that says about me.
Mm-hmm.
But it bugged me. And then, for me, I felt like the motivation of, okay, so one thing that I was pleasantly surprised with is that Jane Seymour was in this movie.
Oh, yes, I completely failed to mention that she was in this movie.
Love me some Jane Seymour. Yeah. Didn't get her character's motivation.
Why she's, like, a witch to...
Yeah, why is she so horrible to her?
So...
It, like...
The thing that we're supposed... That's supposed to be implied is that she's there to entertain the customers who will be returning customers. So, the ladies who pay for the platinum package are, like, the Amelia Hartwrights who come back again and again and again. But I agree. I think that they kind of tone it up way too much mm-hmm. in how she treats Jane.
She could have been because a little more subtle.
If she was totally sweet, I actually think it would have been better if she was, like, totally sweet and polite the whole time. Mm-hmm. So that then in the end when she's like, oh no, I had scripted for you to fall in love with the servant, mm-hmm. that makes that stab in the back just like...
Yeah, make her sweet, but, like, inattentive maybe. Mm-hmm.
But there also had to be the threat of her going home. So that was part of it as well.
But it's dumb that, like... Like, the other lady is like, oh, no, it was my phone. And then, mm-hmm. and the threat of her going home was so short-lived.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like a real threat. Mm-hmm. And, like, the scene where you find out the truth about Martin didn't feel like a real shock. Like, I didn't feel the emotional investment there. And I felt like the development... If I were to rewrite this story, I would have drastically increased the amount of time that she spent with Nobly. Mm-hmm. And I would have had them bicker a lot in the beginning. Mm-hmm. They should have butted heads. And then there should have been, like, a moment where they both kind of come to the same conclusion and they agree. And it's weird because they're not happy that... They're on the same term for a second, and then, but in that moment, we realize the potential for their, like, compatibility, mm-hmm. and then she keeps running off with Martin, and that we see that that is kind of paining him, and he doesn't know why, and, you know, like, there, I don't know, I wasn't invested in any of their relationships. Mm. I cared a lot more about the, I predicted this, I cared a lot more about the side characters.
Yeah. But I will... Okay, so I agree, and and you said in the beginning that if you're not super invested in the protagonist, like, you mm-hmm. know, it's out. I am much more invested in the love interest than the protagonist, and I think that's why I like the ending so much,
yeah.
is that I think everything with him is kind of conveying what the theme is supposed to be, rather than her.
I guess so. I guess I just didn't, like, in a lot of romance movies, mm-hmm. when the love interest falls in love with the protagonist, I get it. I'm like, yeah, why wouldn't you? She's precious. She's mm-hmm. wonderful. And you're hot, and you'd be a great couple. Like, here I was like, okay, like, why? Like, I just didn't get it.
Got it.
So, yeah. Wasn't a huge fan of that. Didn't buy the kiss at the end. I don't know. I just didn't love it. We never did a plot synopsis at the beginning.
Oh, probably should. I feel like if you've heard the title, you kind of get it. A woman basically goes to a Austin LARPing experience. Yeah.
If you don't know what LARPing is, it's live action role play. You pay a bunch of money to wear fancy costumes and pretend to be somebody you're not. It's grown-up make-believe.
10 out of 10 would fork up money to do something like this.
Literally, as soon as COVID is over,
I don't know what that says about me.
By the way, I was going to say this earlier, but apparently there's a LARP where you can be a pirate and you sail.
What?
In Europe.
What?
It's like in France. You literally get on a pirate ship and you... like, sail close to the coast, and...
Is it in French?
I don't... Maybe it's in England. I can't
remember.
That's
the important question there.
It's in English.
Uh-huh. We should go. Sorry.
I'll send you... There's a video of it. There's...
Okay.
There's this YouTuber called Momo O'Brien. And she's precious and wonderful, and she's a LARPer, and she
Am
just...
Am I about to stay up till midnight looking up LARPing? I'm sorry, yeah. Go ahead.
No, but she just documents, like, LARP experiences, and she has one about the pirate ship. I'll send it to you, it's great.
Oh,
she's done a lot of fun. I'll send you her channel, she's great. Highly recommend. But anyway, so that one's on my bucket list ever since I saw her.
Wow.
Talk about it. But yeah, so this woman goes to live action role play her like Austin fantasy, and her sister's like, you need to grow up because it's weird that you're still obsessed with Jane Austen. Like, you know, a good like 50% of women aren't in the exact same boat. You know, and then she goes there, and of course she falls in love with the Mr. Darcy character, kind of, but then it's like, hey, he's an actor, but then he's not. He genuinely likes her. And then they get together, and that's the end. okay, what I did like about this, I don't remember the guy's name. East? Captain East?
Captain East and or Colonel Andrews.
Was a snack.
Absolutely. He walked in. And Liv, like, slow turned to me and was like, oh no, he's hot.
It's true. He's very hot. And then, what was his, Colonel
Andrews.
Colonel Andrews. So James Callis's character was just a treat, and I loved him.
Smother me in butter and drop me in the saucepan.
It's funny because his character is, like, very flamboyantly gay.
Uh-huh.
And he, like, very clearly, like, so when he voices Alucard in Castlevania, he lowers his voice.
Yeah.
And I've heard his normal voice, in interviews. And so this one, he, like...
Raises it.
So his real voice is somewhere between the two, but there was one moment where he slipped into a lower register, and I was like, oh no, it's Alucard, and it just, like, really, like, messed me up for a second, but I highly enjoyed it. Like I expected, Jennifer Coolidge was hysterical.
Yeah.
She can do no wrong. I mean, she's super campy and over the top and goofy, but that's exactly what I want from a Jennifer Coolidge movie. Mm-hmm. I love how they make her say salmon in every movie she's ever Salmon! yeah, I really enjoyed her. The costumes were great. The set design was really fun.
It's
down to the tiniest details.
Yes, there's so many little details in the background of the set. There's all the taxidermied animals everywhere. There is the my favorite set piece in the whole thing is when they do the little theatrical. Mm-hmm. And, like, so much of it is so ornately done, but then someone's pulling two spray-painted inflatable dolphins across the stage to show that it's in the ocean, and I don't know. Like, you can clearly tell that this place is trying to cater, like, kind of, sort of, to women who like Jane Austen, mm-hmm. but really it's to women who like modern Regency romance.
Yes.
And don't actually care about the historical accuracy because
yes.
we have these big, gaudy, you know... cottagecore picnics where she's using tongs to shovel mozzarella sticks into her mouth. Like, what?
Why was that the most relatable scene in the movie?
Yeah, so all of those little things I just find hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just play off of them so well. All the little things that Jennifer Coolidge is saying in the background and, like, weird ad-libbed lines mm-hmm. that she throws in are just hilarious to me. When they're playing croquet, and she's like, get on with it, you old windbag! Like, she's doing, like, the most Dick Van Dyke
so
British
true.
Impression.
She's like, she keeps using, like, W's for R's, like,
oh,
that's British.
Oh, wee-wee? What luminous skin you possess. And she goes, oh, really? That's because late at night, when I'm all alone, I put my face in the fire.
She's so weird, and I love it.
I actually, speaking of weird, I also really like Amelia Hartwright and her weirdness. Like, I love the way she, like...
What's the actress' name? Georgia King, right?
Yes. Okay. The way she, like,
what
moves.
Was the... When she says, like, Amelia, or something like that.
You must call me Amelia.
And then she's like, come.
Bosom sister.
This is just like, come hither. And she, like, does her arms.
Make haste.
Make haste. And that's it. And she, like, sashays out of the room. And she, like, just, oh my god, she's so funny. But yeah, that was the thing. I cared so much more about her. And then she gets shot in the eye with, like, a fake arrow by Jennifer Coolidge when they're doing the play.
Yep.
And then she, like, turns around. She's got this hideous eye patch. She's like...
It's infected.
But it's not just, it's infected. It's infected. And then she, like, storms off dramatically. I loved her. She was wonderful.
Oh, my gosh.
So, 10 out of 10.
I'm much more invested in.
Yeah. What else? Oh, this movie committed one of, to me, what is the biggest movie sins ever. I hate it. Every time a movie does this, it makes me irrationally angry. So there's the ball scene, and they're dancing.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned this, yeah.
Oh, I was, like, livid. I still am livid thinking about it. So they're dancing, and then there's music playing, like, the score of the movie. They are clearly not dancing.
To that music.
To the same music.
Yeah.
They are not on beat. And it's like... Who let that happen?
Yep.
Like, I don't get it. I really, really, really appreciate movies that care about the music in it.
Mm-hmm.
And this film clearly didn't.
Yeah.
And it bugs me.
I agree.
That, like, it's just a little extra effort.
It, like I said, for me, it's not a well-made movie.
No.
This kind of, for me, has, like, the vibe of a good Hallmark movie is how I feel when I'm watching it.
Yes.
And I don't care for Hallmark movies, but I'm like, this for me, this is my Hallmark.
Yeah.
This and Princess Switch are my Hallmark.
You know what, though? I don't know what this says about me, and I don't know what this means. I don't care for chick flicks until it's December.
And then suddenly it's like...
If you put a Christmas wreath in the back of a chick flick, I'm like, oh my god, I love this movie. Love Actually is one of my favorites. Holiday.
Now The Holiday's perfect. I don't care for Love Actually.
I love Love Actually. But, like, what the Princess Switch was totally here for. Even though the second one was bad, I enjoyed it.
Did we watch The Christmas Prince last
year? Still on our list.
Yeah, that's gonna have to happen this year.
Okay.
I don't care for it nearly as much as The Princess Switch, but, you know, it's Christmas and there's a prince.
But, like, I love all those films.
Mm-hmm.
I love romance at Christmas time.
Interesting.
But... And I don't care how cheesy it is.
Yeah.
But the rest of the year, I love a romance film. But it has to be immaculate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm very unforgiving of romance films. So, I don't know why that is. I feel like I need to do some soul searching and figure that out.
I've gotten more critical of them as I've gotten older.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting which ones I will turn my critical lens off for.
Mm-hmm.
Or I, like this movie... I feel like, to some extent, I do appreciate it critically because I do understand the theme that they went for with what it's saying about fantasy, and I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
But I recognize all the, like, filmmaking flaws that exist in this movie.
I actually wasn't too concerned with the filmmaking flaws as much as I was just, like, the general story flaws.
Mm-hmm.
You know what else I think was the problem with this movie? And it's really not a problem with this movie. It's the fact that... So the last time we recorded together, I spent the night. And after we were done recording Phantom of the Opera...
Yes.
You showed me... Is it 2020?
Oh, yeah.
Emma 2020.
Yes. Which I've mentioned it on this podcast before. I cannot recommend it highly enough. It's my favorite film adaptation of anything, Austin. Not including the Pride and Prejudice miniseries, that was for television. I mean, for the big screen.
When I tell you that we finished watching that movie, and I went to sleep that night
and I could not get it out of my head.
Yeah.
And then I went home. First of all, I cried at the end of this movie.
Yeah.
I went home, sat down in front of the TV, called for Kyle, and said, I'm buying a movie. I need to show it to you right now. And even though we had watched Emma 2020 mm-hmm. the night before, it had not been a full 24 hours since I'd seen it. I bought it, and I made my husband watch it with me.
Yeah.
And when I tell you that I cried from the first beat of the score till pretty much the end of the movie, like, my husband was like, are you okay? And I was like, I just really liked this movie, like, eight times. I was like, it's just a really good movie.
It's a perfect movie.
It really is. So I think, too, like, had I not recently seen that,
that's fair,
I think I might have enjoyed this more. But that, like, rekindled a lot of my, like, big Austonian fantasies and feelings, and this just wasn't
up
to snuff.
This really makes me want to show you, I don't think you've seen these, so we've talked about, like, having just a day where I just show her Jane Austen things. On Prime, there is Love and Friendship, which is an adaptation of a short epistolary, I don't know if it would fall under novella or short story, that she wrote, called Lady Susan. There is Northanger Abbey that came out, I think, in 2007.
Is that the one that J.G. Fields is in?
Yes, it is the one that J.G. Fields is in. And
he is a cutie.
What's her face? She's adorable. Oh my gosh, she's so cute. Cute little British. I can't believe I can't remember it. I'm gonna look it up real quick. And then have you seen the 2007 Persuasion is the other question.
I have not.
That's the other one that I want to show you. That is the one where if the pining don't get to you, nothing will. Absolutely nothing will. Felicity Jones is in Northanger Abbey. That's whose name I couldn't remember.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So, she's super cute in there. And, oh, and so is, Daisy Gatsby.
Carrie Mulligan.
Carrie Mulligan is in Northanger Abbey.
Is she still Carrie Mulligan, or did she change her last name?
I have no idea.
I know she's married to Marcus Mumford from Mumford & Sons.
I did not know that. Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if she kept Mulligan or if she changed it.
So. Yeah.
If she's Carrie Mumford now, sorry. Yeah. For getting your name wrong, but Carrie Mulligan, I guess.
So, I fully acknowledge that, like, I am, like, the big Austen fangirl, and this is kind of just, like, a dopey love letter to that, along with some, like, you know, just extra ridiculousness added on.
Mm-hmm.
So,
It was a fun film. You know what? I told you this before. I'm not a huge Carrie Russell fan.
I'm honestly not a big Carrie Russell fan either.
I can't decide if that had something to do with it.
I can't believe we've got this entire podcast and it hasn't come up once, so I'm going to do it now. I was not excited when it was announced that she was going to be in Star Wars. Not excited at all.
Is she playing Star Wars?
She's in Episode 9. I literally don't remember her character's name. She is the most pointless character. Guess why she's there? She's there to no homo Poe Dameron. That's literally why she's there. But we'll talk about that later. So I feel like she just doesn't get the best character opportunities, unfortunately. We'll talk about it later. I see your face. We can't do it right now.
You'll
have your chance.
Okay.
And then after we watch that shit show, we'll watch episode 3 and everything will be good again. But now you have made it my mission to try and find... I've already found a rom-com that melts your heart because Emma did it.
Emma did. But yeah, Emma had high... like, ratings.
Yeah.
And you know what? You showed me The Princess Switch, and I was literally laying on the floor.
Yeah,
screaming. Like, tearing up and screaming over what is quite literally, like, the Hallmarkiest of movies.
Yeah.
I said, I love a good rom-com. I'm just picky about them.
Yeah. So I guess what is your final rating of this?
Four out of ten teapots.
Okay.
On Carrie Russell's shelf in her bedroom.
That is still higher than your rating for Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Because it was a bad movie. Garbage. The ending of this one was meh. The ending of that one was
infuriating.
And they had a freeze frame. You know how I feel about freeze frames.
Yeah.
Like, the third Harry Potter would probably have been my favorite. Easily one of my favorites of the Harry Potter films. But it ended on a freeze frame. So it's, like,
yeah,
towards the bottom of the pack.
Yeah.
I don't know why it's terrible. I hate freeze frames.
I give this movie 4 out of 5 needless taxidermied lambs.
Okay. Okay.
And that's just for me. We don't have really a theme for this month.
Right.
We did decide that we're kind of picking our individual themes. We're picking individual themes.
Because normally, even when we don't have theme months, normally we try to respond to each other. So, like, yeah. I showed you Last Unicorn, which is one of my favorite animated films. You showed me Sinbad, which is one of your favorite animated films. Yeah. Usually we try to have movies that, like, respond to each other or engage with each other. But again, my problem is I like rom-coms that at are Christmas. Good or at Christmas and it's the wrong sorry that let's sounded really snobby.
Let's show each other trashy movies but not Lizzie's kind of trash.
I'm sorry,
like, leave me alone.
No, but I kept looking at rom-coms. Here's the problem, even the trashy rom-coms that I've seen and loved, you were like, oh, I love that one. I was like, damn it, Lizzie, I don't have anything to show you.
I do have another rom-com to show you that is not as trashy as this that I can't believe you haven't seen, but I'm going to show it
to
you.
Which one was it?
It will not be the next one that I show you, but at some point, we're going to watch Down with Love.
Okay.
And I'm really excited. Okay. I really want to show it to you now, but I've already picked out what my next one's going to be.
Okay.
So my theme for this month is girly, frilly costume dramas. Mm-hmm. And yours is not that.
Mine is not that. Mine is basically going to be, it's like, I'm going back to my roots of, like, 80s and 90s, like, animated high fantasy.
Yep.
Taking it back old school.
Which I should have seen more of than I have, so.
So, the next film we're going to watch, I am going to show you Quest for Camelot.
Oh, that's the next one we're going to
do? I think so, yeah.
Okay.
And then,
Can I tell you, I saw it, like, in high school when I was babysitting or something, and I don't really remember much of it. I remember my friends singing the, like every tree stands on its own. So I know that part. And then my friend's little brother, every time we were in the car, he would play the dragon song. So I literally know the two lines. Uh-huh. I'd be rocking with the rhinos.
Yep.
Swinging with the dinos. And that's it. That's all I know. And it has Cary Elwes. That's all I know.
Yeah, Cary Elwes is in it. It's not a good movie.
Yeah,
it's objectively bad. It's really bad. Yeah. The animation's not good. That being said, the prince character is a snack cake.
Okay.
He's great. He's so good that I forgive most of the movie.
Can I be honest? That's all my rom-coms that I like are that you don't care for.
Yeah.
The men are snack cakes and I forgive the majority of the movie.
Yep.
They're either Bat Darcy's or they're J.J. Feld with his big cute ears. And
he does have big cute ears.
His soft, innocent eyes that question if you love him.
I will say, when he walked up, he was like, I'm a history professor. I was like,
Oh no. It's the palm kiss for me.
Yep.
It's the palm kiss.
It's the eyes when he says, I love you in the play for me.
That happened and you went, oh.
Yep. He definitely sold it for me.
Yeah.
The
moment for me, the first moment when I was like, oh no, when they're in the garden, he's like, you don't annoy me.
Mm-hmm.
You make me nervous. I was like,
I wanted to feel like she was desperately in love with him and that she chose Martin because she thought he was an actor. Like, because she thought J.J. Fields was an actor. Which is kind of what happened, but...
You didn't believe the performance.
I didn't believe the performance.
Got it.
Yeah. I didn't really believe that... I believe she had a crush on him. I didn't believe that she had fallen in love with him.
Got it.
That's the difference.
I believed he was in love with her.
Oh, I absolutely believed his performance.
I just didn't believe hers. Why? But I got it. I will let you know if I think the performances in Quest for Camelot are better or worse.
I mean, Cary Elwes is great. Eric Idle's in it. He's great.
Okay. Well.
Anyways.
That's all the time we have.
Join us next week for another crappy animated film. Yay!
When was our last crappy animated film, real quick? I'm trying to remember.
I don't know.
It wasn't Sinbad, was it? There has to have been
it
one after Sinbad.
Might have been.
We'll have to go back and look at this.
Hmm.
But I will remember. I'll remember this. Alrighty. Well, thank you for joining me.
It was fun. If nothing else, it was a fun time.
I always have fun with you.
Alright, bye!
See you next week.
For hopping in the trash can with us.
Give this week's movie a watch and tell us what you think.
And let us know what movies you think are trashy treasure.
Maybe we'll give it a watch.
Follow us on Twitter at Liv and Lizzie to tell us your thoughts.
And remember, no matter how trash you feel, you are deeply treasured.
Bye!